Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Bethany Kelly, your host for amazing authors and brilliant books. Our topic today is three reasons why every writer needs an editor. Such a great topic. And our leading lady today is Eve Gumpel with Good Writing Matters. She's also a founding partner in Women Lead Publishing. So good morning, Eve. How are you?
Good morning. I'm real happy to be here to talk about my favorite topic, editing.
Hooray. Well, this is great. And we work together in different settings, and especially in Women Lead Publishing, and we've talked about editing all the time. So I am looking forward to this conversation and finding out from you all the inside scoop and details that our listeners can become educated on and learn more about this topic. So let's just dive in. A lot of times, authors that I work with, I know, don't really understand that there's different types of editing and different types of editors. And this comes as a shock because I think editing, they have an idea in their head, editing is a certain type of thing. So I'd love it if you could just enlighten us. Tell us a little bit about the different kinds of editing, the different types of editors.
Okay, yeah, there are several different types of editors, starting with a structural or developmental editor. This is someone who sort of takes a 360-degree view of the manuscript, and that can happen either at the beginning of the process. For example, the editor can help you narrow your focus and help you decide what should be contained in each chapter, or they can get involved in mid-stage or late-stage to see if the manuscript's in logical order, whether there's information missing, whether you need to rewrite some sections, or if you've gone off on some tangent that you should save for your next book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And I know you've done some of this with some of your clients.
I think another thing that a developmental editor will do is we'll be looking at the overall tone and voice, clarity, those kinds of things, and giving feedback along those big picture, some of those big picture topics.
Well, that's what a good editor does, yes. Then there's the kind of editor that not everyone uses, a line editor. That's someone who goes through your book line by line, editing each sentence and paragraph. And the idea is to make it just flow so smoothly that it's sort of like a slinky toy flowing downstairs, to make sure your word choice is precise, that all the sentences have punch, and just make it read so that it's enjoyable to read. And then there's the copy editor, which most people have heard of.
Oh, so can I ask you a question about the line editor then?
Sure.
So would you say that the purpose of a line editor is to take your existing writing and make it better?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Go into the copy editor.
Copy editor. That's kind of one step below a line editor. They're going to correct your awkward sentences, your run-on sentences. A good copy editor will check your facts, make sure that you haven't quoted someone based on the Internet always tells you who said something, and a lot of times that's not actually the case. And so a good copy editor will check to make sure that quote was actually said by that person. They correct punctuation, grammar, and they can point out places where you've repeated yourself or where you've got too much information or things that you can eliminate. And
so
then
would
the
you
final
say that the purpose?
What?
Sorry. Would you say that the purpose then of a copy editor is to make your writing correct and accurate?
And also to make it read well. To some extent, they're doing a little bit of what the line editor is doing, trying to make sure it flows well. They're just
not quite as picky as
changing every single sentence to make sure that it shines.
Right, right. Excellent.
And the final thing is a proofreader, and that's like the last step. Usually when you've already got the galley proof of your book as it's going to appear on the shelves. And so that person's job is twofold. One is to check your grammar and punctuation. The other is to check your formatting, which is probably something we should discuss because there are definite rules, especially if you're going to present your book to a traditional publisher. So I would say those are the four kinds of editors.
I would say that the proofreader's job is to find any errors, like last minute errors. They're not supposed to be actually editing anything at that point, but they're looking for the mistakes that got through. And because it's amazing how much there's things that you can legitimately miss. Everyone can legitimately miss because your brain just sees things differently when you're reading on a screen as opposed to when you're reading on a page. So that's why I'm always an advocate of a proofread at the end. Someone's actually reading it on paper because the brain sees different things.
Yeah, I mean, editors are only human, and even the best copy editor, and the best copy editors will read everything twice. I certainly do that. I'll read it, I'll track the changes, and then I'll make an untracked version and read through it all again to make sure I haven't introduced any errors. And it's amazing how many things I find that second time through that I missed the first time around. So there's probably some things, if I went through it a third time, that I'd find, and that's what the proofreader finds for me.
Yeah,
because if I went through it a third time, I've read it too many times. I'm not going to see them.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That is absolutely right. So tell me a little bit, like, when do you recommend, or why would you recommend an editor for these different stages? How would an author know when they should be getting editing at these different, when they should be considering these different types of editors?
Well, to some extent, it depends on you and how confident you are about your book. If you've written a draft of your book and you're just not quite sure it's ready for prime time, you might want to call in a developmental editor to look at it and say, yeah, it's actually fine, or you can fix this and this and this and this and this here, and they may or may not tell you how you can do that. I think just everybody needs a copy editor when they're finished with the book. And that's not after they've written the first draft. That's after they've looked at it a couple times. They may have asked some beta readers to read it, and they've made some changes to it. Because the first draft, usually you're just trying to get everything on paper that you want to get in your book.
Yeah.
And then you go through it again, and you figure out what you really need to include, what maybe doesn't have to be included, what doesn't read that well, and kind of polish it up. So the copy editor, to some extent, should get a polished version of your book, as polished as you can make it, before you hand it over. And I've had clients who've given me books to copy edit, and I've said, you know, you really need to go talk to a developmental editor because this needs work.
Exactly. And so if you were going to say that there was one kind of editing that everybody absolutely must have, which one would that be?
I think the copy editor.
I would totally agree with you.
And I really think you shouldn't skip the proofreader either because, again, they're reading the galley, and there can be mistakes. I've seen galleys with, you know, paragraphs left out or paragraphs repeated.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes, you know, you can even – it's not somebody – you don't necessarily have to pay for a proofreader. It's great if you can because they're going to be very professional. But if you have a friend who's always, like, finding mistakes in books, because you find them. I find them all the time. I'm reading books that I get at the bookstore. I'm like, oh, look, there's a mistake. If you have a friend like that, that's a good person to be like, hey, would you proofread my book? Because they'll find those things that other people won't.
Again, they also need to sort of know about finding formatting things like widows and orphans at the end of a page.
Exactly.
So they, you know, and there's actually, I actually have a little tiny book called 80 Common Layout Errors to Flag When Proofreading Your Book.
And
it's a great little thing. You can find it on Amazon.
I did not know that, Eve. That's fantastic. Well, we definitely, say the name of the title again.
Hang on a second. It's 80 Common Layout Errors to Flag When Proofreading Book Interiors, and it's written by Lynette M. Smith.
All right. That's great. That's a great resource. Excellent.
It is. I use it all the time.
So what would be the tips that you might have for engaging an editor, for finding an editor, engaging an editor, for someone who's writing their book and maybe they're doing it on their own primarily?
Mm-hmm.
What would you recommend to them in terms of going through the process?
Well, one thing is to ask somebody who's, you know, who already is an author who they used. A recommendation is always best. And, you know, fees for editing are all over the place. And probably an editor who's worked for a traditional publisher in the past can charge more than an editor who's only edited self-published books. But basically what I do and what I recommend is send a sample of just a few pages to the editors for a sample edit. And if you do that with a couple of different editors, you should be able to tell which ones edits you can work with and which ones you can't. You know, maybe you don't want a heavy edit. I tend to edit heavily and make lots of changes in things and ask lots of questions and make lots of suggestions. And maybe you just want a light edit and you just want to make sure that the grammar and punctuation are right. You know, you probably don't want to hire me. Even though, you know, I make sure that I realize it's your book, and any suggestion I make, you can accept or not accept. And sometimes I don't know which ones have been accepted and which ones hadn't because I don't see the book again. Sometimes an editor will author or client will send the book back with some changes that I've recommended and say, you know, is this better now? And then I can go through and say, yeah, that works a lot better, or you're right, that really doesn't need fixing. Because sometimes, you know, I don't know what's going on in your head, but you don't know what's going on in the reader's head. So it just has to be clear. And
that's
sometimes,
you
need to talk to the editor and make sure you get an editor that, you know, yes, you can call me and talk to me and ask me a question about what I've suggested. And, you probably don't need the cheapest editor, but you probably don't need the most expensive editor.
Yeah. So I'm going to take a break here because I just want to let everyone know that if you want to engage with Eve, she is a fantastic editor, and she is available for editing projects. So how could our authors get in touch with you, Eve? What is the best way?
My email is eve@evegumpel.com. And my website is evegumpel.com.
Fabulous. That makes it easy. Eve Gumpel. So I want to ask a couple more questions about pricing. Like, can you give us a bit of an idea of, like, how do editors price out their services? Is it going to be a per-word thing? Is it going to be a project price? Just give us an idea, like, a range, or what can people expect?
I don't know how all editors figure out their prices. And sometimes it is per word, sometimes it is some sort of a overall fee. A lot of it is based on how long your book is, how many words your book is, and they will typically, you know, figure out some sort of formula that is a certain amount per word or per page or how long it's going to take them to edit that many pages, and they'll come up with a price. And it can be, I mean, I've seen everything from, you know, $500 for a 60,000-word book to, you know, several thousand dollars for a 60,000-word book. It just depends on the editor, and you have to decide, you know, is that person worth it, and is that book worth it?
Exactly. And it really does, I believe, have a lot to do with how long your book is, because the price quote that you get for a 40,000-word book is going to be vastly different than if it's 250,000 words, for example, because the longer your book is, the longer it's going to take an editor to go over it. And one thing that I notice people do a lot is they, when I'm asking questions about, well, how long is their book, they're like, oh, it's like 150 pages. And I'm like, okay, that tells me nothing, actually, because how are they formatting that page, you know? Are they using a 8.5 by 11 and they're like the margins are really tight and it's all kinds of really small font, like the page count really has no bearing at all on length of a document. And the only thing that really can tell someone how long a book is going to be is the word count. And if you don't know where to find the word count, you can find it in Word. Word will always tell you under the review panel, there's a box there for word count. Or sometimes, you can just look down at the bottom of the Word document and it'll tell you how many words are in that document. So when you're looking for an editor and you're needing to get a price quote, get your word count and share that with them, because that's going to be the most helpful metric that they will need. All right, now I'm going to get off my high horse. What do you think, Eve?
That is so true, and it's really lucky that now we don't actually have to sit there and count words on a page, and we can just ask the computer.
Exactly.
I mean, I sort of, you know, my estimate is always 250 words a page, but that's pretty much, you know, book size. And if it's an 8 by 11 and it's single-spaced, there's going to be a lot more than 250 words on that page. And by the way, if you're going to write your manuscript, never single-space it. Always double-space it.
Okay, good point. I'll keep that in mind for the manuscript I'm writing, Eve, because I'm definitely not double-spacing it. So tell me why that is.
Because it's easier to read. And it's more attractive.
Okay.
For example, you mentioned tight margins. If you leave a nice margin, like I tend to leave 1.25 on each side of the page, which is a little more than Word actually uses as a default, because the more white space you've got on the page, the more attractive it is and the easier it is to read.
True. Very good.
So formatting, is a big deal.
Oh, go ahead.
And especially if you're going to, you know, publishers have a certain thing. They want everything to be, you know, they want you to pick 12 points. You should pick a serif type rather than a sans serif type, meaning the kind of type that has little tags on the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain other things that go along with good formatting. But basically, double space, decent-sized margins, and chapters should start a certain amount down the page, too, like about a third of the way down the page.
Yeah, and let me explain, too, that if you are self-publishing and you are going to be creating your Word document is going to actually be the interior of the book, and there are some people who do it themselves and handle their own formatting, you really want to pay attention to formatting in that case, because how the book looks on the inside is going to contribute a great deal to whether someone picks it up or not. However, if you are going to be engaging a designer to do the cover and the interior of your book, the designer can handle a lot of the formatting, and a good designer should handle a lot of the formatting on the inside. So then it's not as important that you have all of the little formatting things done, because the designer can handle that. But if you're doing it yourself, you do want to pay attention to the formatting issues that typically come up.
And some copy editors, if you give your book to the copy editor, they'll charge you a certain amount for formatting it correctly.
Exactly, exactly. And that's a good thing to know when you're engaging a copy editor. If you want to know enough about your book and where you're at in the process so that you can ask for what you need. And that's why we talked about the different types of editors at the beginning, because often if you don't understand that, it's hard to ask for the kind of editing you need or to be able to evaluate if they're going to give it to you. Because sometimes editors are more line editors or developmental editors, and if they're a developmental editor and you're looking for a copy editor, what they are going to give you is not going to be what you are expecting. And then you'll have disappointed expectations and you'll feel frustrated, like you spent money and you didn't get what you wanted. So understanding what you want and need is important and key, because then you'll be able to get what you want and need. And you'll be able to more carefully evaluate if the editor that you're engaging with is the right fit.
That's so true. I have to echo that and agree with that.
So are there any questions that are really good for someone to ask you? Or is there, when someone contacts you and wants to engage you in editing, are there any questions that you always ask them or anything specifically that you need? How could a aspiring author, you know, make it easy for an editor?
That's an excellent question. I'm not sure I have an answer.
That's okay.
I think you do want to probably talk to the editor by phone rather than just do emails, so that you get a sense of who they are, and that editor will probably ask questions. I mean, starting with how long's the book, what's it about, is it fiction or nonfiction? Because that makes a difference, too. Some editors probably only do nonfiction, and some editors will do fiction. And I know I enjoy reading fiction because it's more fun, but I also discover that the second read-through has to be even more careful, because I've been busy reading the book and enjoying the book, and every once in a while I forget that I'm supposed to be editing it.
Yeah, exactly. So do you feel like there is a certain type of expertise in editing that lends itself more towards fiction over nonfiction? How important do you think familiarity with the subject matter is?
Actually, I think, if it's a nonfiction book, I think you probably shouldn't have somebody who knows the subject matter, because your reader is probably not going to know the subject matter really well. And the editor will have a question if you haven't explained something well, if you've left something out, because you know the topic so well.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, you're better off if it's somebody reading it the way a reader reads it.
Yeah, that's right. And when it comes to developmental editing, I think that there is a different skill set that is needed for a fiction book as opposed to a nonfiction book. And with nonfiction books, it's more about presenting information, right? And with a fiction book, it's all about presenting a story. And there are elements to creating a strong story that has to be present. And a developmental editor may be better at one or the other. They might be fine at both, but you probably want to ask them where the majority of their experience lies in fiction.
There are a lot more moving parts to a novel, because you've got characters that have to be well drawn, and you can't have green eyes on one page and blue eyes on the next page. They have to grow and you have to have something that keeps the reader turning the page. So there's a lot of things that have to be put together there that, in a nonfiction book, again, yeah, you're explaining it. It needs to be in the right order. It needs to be explained well. But there aren't quite as many little parts you have to put together.
Right. Right. So that's a good thing to think of as well. So I know we just have a few more minutes, but I'm curious, Eve, are there some things that authors can do or keep in mind as they write, things that as an editor you will always flag?
One thing is just write in a conversational style. Don't try to sound too academic because you end up opening a distance between you and the reader. You also want to talk about your own experiences, because if you're, you know, talking about, you know, Steve Jobs, everybody's talking about Steve Jobs. Talk about what happened in your experience, and that way the book is uniquely yours because nobody else can tell that story.
Mm-hmm.
And just some sort of mechanical type things. Manuscripts require an Oxford or serial comma. That's the comma before the last and in a series. That's the style according to the Bible for Authors, which is Chicago Manual of Style. If you're writing a book, you should probably get a copy of Chicago Manual of Style either online or offline. Sometimes it's easier to find things online because the book is confusing. It's not in alphabetical order, so you have to figure out where you're going to find the answer that you want.
Right.
Things like use exclamation points sparingly. They're designed for emphasis. And if you emphasize everything, you don't emphasize anything.
Good point.
And then there's some of my pet peeves. And the top one is that all commas and periods always go inside the quotes in the United States. If you're in England, there's a choice. But if you're in the United States, I want those commas and periods inside the quotes. I am tired of fixing them.
Oh, that's great. I think I'm a real, I screw that up all the time.
Pretty much everyone does. I don't think I've ever run into an author whose book I've edited that hasn't made that mistake. Oh, and here's another one. If you grew up in the typewriter age, you probably leave two spaces between sentences. That's no longer standard. With computers, you don't need two spaces. So the first thing I'm going to do when I'm editing a book is find and replace all the two spaces with one space.
Excellent.
I also recommend keeping a dictionary open as you edit. Like one thing I find is that people tend to hyphenate words that over the past 20 years are now one word instead of hyphenated. So if you think they're hyphenated, I'd say take at least a look in a Merriam-Webster, and you can always do that online these days. Merriam-Webster's my favorite place to look. And then there's be careful about use of adjectives. Vary and really don't add anything to the content. In fact, Mark Twain famously said, substitute damn every time you're inclined to write very. Your editor will delete it and the writing will be just as it should be.
I like that. That's funny. Oh, my God. Wow. Eve, thank you so much for being our leading lady today. You have given us so much information. I think it's going to be really helpful to our listeners. Thank you all to you, our listeners. We will be back again for another Women Lead radio show. We are here every Monday at 9 a.m. and Friday at 2 p.m. So our next leading lady is Deanna Potter with the Center for Organizational Effectiveness. She's going to be talking about goal setting and strategic planning for high performance. Thank you, Eve, so much for being here.
Thanks. It was a lot of fun.
It really was. And thanks to you all for listening. Please keep reading, keep writing, and never forget the power of the written word.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.